Following is a conversation with professional climber, author, and historian Mark Sinnott, whose book, The Third Pole, Mystery, Obsession, and Death on Mount Everest, has just been released in paperback edition. This is the happiness quotient, as if the plot could actually thicken more. The greatest mystery in all of mountaineering and possibly the most debated and discussed in current times just got thicker. The mystery centers around the fate of George Mallory and Sandy Irvin, who disappeared high upon Mount Everest on June 8, 1924. They were last seen at over 28,000 feet, cresting the great northeast ridge going toward the top. For 75 years, their fate remained completely unknown until in 1999, during the search of the vast north face, Conrad Anker came across the body of George Mallory at 26,700 feet. I was high-altitude cameraman on that expedition. On a second and successive search of the site where Mallory's body lay, my climbing partner Andy Politz and I brought a metal detector to more thoroughly search the site, primarily to look for the Kodak vest pocket camera that we know Mallory or Irvin was carrying. We did not find the camera, nor did we solve the mystery of whether Mallory and Irvin made it to the summit. In fact, the discovery itself merely served to richen the mystery. Since then, hundreds, if not thousands, of sleuths have poured themselves into trying to solve the mystery surrounding the fate of Mallory and Irvin. Mark and I returned in 2019 to search for Sandy Irvin on a very hot tip by historian Tom Holzell with a team of filmmakers and guide Jamie McGinnis, who has extensive knowledge about the Mallory and Irvin mystery, having searched in that area where they are thought to have disappeared many times. And he has also spoken to individuals who have claimed to have come into contact with one or the other body. Our ultimate goal in 2019 was to find the camera, of course, in hopes to develop the film that might or might not have photographic proof of their having or not having summited. Well, the plot thickens. As it turns out, the body of Sandy Irvin and the camera were, in fact, discovered by the Chinese, as it turns out, decades ago, and all but proof of that found its way to Mark Sinnott after the publication of his book, and he is only just releasing that information now upon the publication of the paperback edition of his book, The Third Pole, Mystery, Obsession, and Death on Mount Everest. Mark's findings are in the paperback edition in an addendum, and they also appear in an article in Salon this month called The Mount Everest Mystery Deepens, Was There an International Cover-Up of a Dead Climber's Ascent? The link to that article and to Mark Sinnott's webpage where you can buy the book will be in the liner notes of this episode. Before we speak with Mark, please subscribe wherever you may be listening. Also, it is hugely helpful to the show itself if you comment, like, and share this episode with those you care about. Here's my conversation with Mark Sinnott from his home in New Hampshire on 18 April 2022. You released an article in Salon online recently that was sort of a revelation, if you will, that shed new light on the Mallory and Irvin mystery. What the heck happened? It sounds like this is information that everybody in the world who has ever given even half of a care about Mallory and Irvin is right on top of this. This is like big stuff. So,
right?
I thought it was, but it didn't, like, you know, go viral the way that I thought it would. A lot of people are like, eh, whatever.
So what happened?
I've got 3-4 years of my life, you know, invested in this story. Like, yeah, kind of a big deal. Sort of quick synopsis of the story. Well, we went to Everest, you and I, in 2019 to try to solve the mystery. of who really was the first to stand on the summit of Mount Everest. And as far as everyone knows, that was Tenzing Norgay and Edmund Hillary in 1953. Students of Everest history know that there's a chance that George Mallory and Sandy Irvin summited in 1924, because they were last seen at 28,200 feet, still going strong for the summit. And that's only 800 feet below the top. And no one knows this story better than you. I mean, I was talking about how I've got 4 years into it. You've got like decades of your life.
Yes. And slight obsession. Yeah.
It's kind of, on the one hand, it's silly, like, oh, who cares? But we care, you know? And the reason why we care is because it's history. It's about the spirit of adventure. It's about mountaineering. It's about Choma Lungma. It's about a sacred mountain. And it just kind of gives us an excuse to have our lives revolve around this cool thing. And it's pretty easy to be nihilistic in this world. And deep down I am. And I figured that out when I was really young. And I realized, okay, like in order for me not to completely lose the plot, I need to create my own meaning in life. I need to like attach importance to things and care about them deeply. And that's what's going to give me the orientation and direction and purpose that I need in life. Because if I just sit there and existentially try to figure it out, like there's nothing actually there and this isn't working. And I tried to do that. So for me, it's mountains and adventure. And so, I mean, I'm kind of going off on a tangent here,
but it's a good tangent.
This is why people like you and I, we care about this. We care about this story so much. And so in 2019, we use this question to launch this whole expedition, to go with this new research, to try to find the remains of Sandy Irvin and the camera. And that involved me going out to these GPS coordinates in the yellow band. And I think I left the fixed ropes at like 27,700 feet and did kind of like this adventurous little mission out to what we called the Holzell spot, which was all based on research by our friend, Everest historian, Tom Holzell. And it was you and I and Renan, we all decided that the intel was pretty solid, enough so that we were willing to risk our lives to see if we could figure this out, to see if Sandy was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to those GPS coordinates, and that's one of the most wild things I've ever done. And he wasn't there. And, you know, we had heard a few rumors going into it that, hey, the Chinese already found Sandy and they found the camera. And it was just really like, at first we did hear that officially, we heard that before the trip, but it was just very much rumor and innuendo. There was nothing backing it up. So we were like, okay, yeah, no, that's not really a thing. Then, you know, so we came home and I spent a year or more writing this book, and I was going in deep and doing so many interviews and background and research and reading, and it kept popping up. And I don't want to exaggerate, but I think I could say, you know, just offhand, maybe like six different separate sources who weren't getting it from each other, who are all saying the same thing. Oh, the Chinese already found the body. And so in the book, I wrote it up. Hey, here's what I'm hearing. Here's what might have happened. The Chinese might have found the body.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just pure rumor, and I had no proof. But after the expedition, someone who wants to remain anonymous, this is actually another anonymous person. There's a lot of people who don't want to get on the wrong side of the Chinese and the Chinese government. But this person who had contacts with the Chinese Tibet Mountaineering Association told our guide, Jamie McGinnis, and this is in my book, yeah, it's not rumor. This actually really did happen. I heard about this after the expedition, after I was working on the book. And so I said, well, I'm going to go to the CTMA and I'm going to interview them and I'm going to ask them point blank. And I communicated with the CTMA and I told them, hey, I want to ask you some stuff about Mallory and Irvin. And I was communicating with the, I think, the director, and through an intermediary. And they said, okay, yes, sure, you should come. And I had plane tickets. I had a whole plan. I had reservations to go and see pandas in Sichuan province. That's how I was going to go in. I was going to go through Chengdu and then take the train to Lhasa.
Wow.
And then I started hearing about this novel coronavirus. I mean, this is in February of 2020.
Yeah.
And you know what happened? China shut down. I haven't been able to make it in since. It's been closed ever since. So 2 years later, 2+ years later, it's still closed. Americans, no one is going to China.
No one's on Everest other than nationals there.
So the book comes out and this guy contacts me and he says, oh, hey, I have information about the camera and I've been sitting on it all these years because I wanted to write about it. I was going to write my own book about it, but I never got around to it. And I'm not actually a writer. And I think you're the guy. And I think you should do it. And you should tell the story. And the story is that the Chinese did find the camera in 1975 on the second expedition to the North Face of China. And the reason we know this is because in a meeting at the China Mountaineering Association in Beijing in 1984, there was a diplomat from the British Embassy at that meeting. And a woman named Pan Dao, who was the first Chinese woman to climb Everest and the second woman to climb Everest, summiting 11 days after Junko Tabai of Japan in 1975. She told this guy point blank, we found a body at 8,200 meters and it had a camera. And we brought that camera home. And they tried to develop the film and it didn't turn out. God. The diplomat wrote a memo. He's a diplomat, so trained in the British Foreign Service. You write a memo. I do this now. I write memos. I like official. So like somebody can look at it later and be like, oh, okay, that actually really happened.
Huh.
That's the story. I wrote it up as a postscript for my book, and then I excerpted that in Ceylon. Honestly, I thought that someone else, you know, there's sort of obvious other publications that could have ran with this story, and nobody wanted to do it.
Amazing.
And Ceylon did, and so I'm really thankful to them. And I, you know, put it out there, and you and I think it's a big deal. I mean, I shouldn't be downplaying it, but... people aren't breaking down my door. No one's called me for an interview. You're the first one.
So this is essentially what that means. First of all, that's amazing. And we had heard rumors. We even tried to call somebody from the car. Jamie got somebody on the phone about another body, not Mallory's body. And that gentleman hung up on us, if you recall. We weren't recording, of course. No memo was written either after that. But if they find a body in 1975 at 8,200 meters, that's about, or that's probably 1,200 feet higher than where Mallory's body was found in 1999. So that would leave us to speculate or know for certain that that was Sandy Irvin's body, right? Because Mallory's body, the way it was in 1999, was so frozen in the position that he obviously died in. I can't see them discarding the body and throwing it down and having it land so seemingly perfectly.
I mean, there were three people who had died on Everest as of
75.
Yeah, well, actually four, because there was a member of the Chinese expedition who died. Mm-hmm. Who disappeared, I believe. There's other people who know this better, way better than me, like Hozel and mostly, Jochen Hemlab. Mm. But there was Maurice Wilson, who was the British mystic, and he never made it to the North Col. So we know that he wasn't up in, the death zone.
We found one of his bones, by the way, in 1999 in advanced base camp, and somebody just threw it back into the glacier. It was and found parts of his tent.
That's basically kind of where he was. So it couldn't be him.
Yeah.
And then there was a Chinese climber who died during that expedition, but that's like a modern thing. And they knew about that. He was one of their team members. Mm-hmm. In terms of old dead bodies, there was only two, Mallory mm-hmm. and Irvin. We know where Mallory was found eventually, right? We have GPS coordinates for that spot. That spot was not at 8,200 meters. It was more like 8,000 meters.
About
26,000, or no,
26,750.
About 26,700. So, whatever that number works out to. The main thing is that location was way off the route. And the testimony from Pandao. They weren't out wandering around like Wang Hongbo, who found Mallory also in 1975, right? That's the groundwork for like all of Hozel's work and Jochen Hemlab for the discovery that you guys made in 1999. In 1970, so Wang Hongbo went way off, and there was a lot of analysis done in terms of where that was. That's not what Pandao was talking about. They were on their summit climb. They were on the route. There's a set place where we know that is. That her testimony from 1975 matches up with Xu Jing's testimony from 1960 for when he took the shortcut down. We're talking up in the yellow band here.
Mm-hmm.
So now, today, after you guys made the discovery in 1999, we can say that the body that Pandao is describing was not Mallory. So it had to be Irvin. And they also said that they found a camera. Jeez. And so people can, sort of make their own assessment, as to what we have here. Personally, I think I can say with a fair amount of certainty that we were on a complete wild goose chase and that we risked our lives for no reason. I do believe that the Chinese found the camera. Part of the Pandao testimony is that not only that they have it, but that they had it in a Chinese museum. And I did some homework on that, and
what
that, by the way, fit in with the rumor from other sources that I had heard. I did some research, and I think I figured out what that museum might be. That's the next step, whether it's me or someone else goes to that museum. I'm quite sure that it's not sitting out on display, not the camera we're talking about. And if it's hidden away somewhere, I doubt they're going to pull it out and be like, oh, yeah, actually. But I did kind of secretly have this hope where it could be something, where like you go to the director of the museum and you say, hey, like, here's the testimony. Here's what we've heard. Do you think maybe this might be hidden back somewhere in some storage locker or some vault and that you guys forgot about it? Let's take a look. And like, oh, wow, you know what? Here it is. Here's the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And, that would be pretty cool. People have been looking for it for 100 years. I'm sure you're well aware that we're coming up on the 100th anniversary of the famous Mallory and Irvin disappearance and, you know, that the 1924 expedition. I'm sure there's going to be things going on with that. It would be really cool, you know, to go to that museum and to find out. That's like the last little bit. But the other part about, you know, going to the base of the North Face with drones and like looking around for the body and crevasse and stuff like that. Like, I personally don't think that any of that really makes sense anymore. At least, you know, from my perspective. And I think at this point, you know, there's not a lot of people who have gone deeper into this than I have. There are some, but you know, Jochen Hemleb, for example, and yourself, but I did go to the spot, you know, to the Hozel spot, and I would not personally put any more time and effort into looking for the camera on the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I think that deal is done. And so I feel like that's, in the end, in the final analysis, that's the contribution, you know, that you and I have made to this story, which I think is significant. And I feel like we did figure something out. And the coolest part about it is that it sort of, it just sort of makes permanent the mystery. I think it just sort of solidifies the idea that the mystery will endure. And maybe we know what happened to the camera and that it was actually discovered. The film's gone. It didn't turn out, really, is what I think. And so we're never going to know. We're never going to know. And there's always going to be that slight chance that they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally would never say that they didn't, because it's sort of like saying, you know, that God doesn't exist. Like, who knows?
Yeah, really?
I'm not saying he does either, but it's... That might be a little bit of a stretch there. That could, you know, possibly be a step too far. But how could we say that they didn't do it? There's just no way to know for sure. And it's that little kernel of maybe, you know, that stirs the imagination, you know, like it has, you know, for both you and I. And so I love the idea that's where it's ended, and we'll never know, so the mystery is going to go on and on and on.
That is so awesome. So real quick question that kind of puts an end to the body of Irvin being at 8,200 meters. So that body, does the location of that, and are you aware of where it was at 8,200 meters? Can you determine if he was using the ridge route to the top or if he was going along the face? Is there anything there? And then what did they do with the body? Did they discard it? Is it theoretical that they did throw him down and he landed in Holzell's spot? Or is he not even worth looking for anymore? And is he over the Kangsheng face, for instance?
They said that they... Pendow said that they buried the body under some rocks. And I guess one thing that I haven't done, this is more of like a Hozel type thing, or somebody, or you could do it, is to look at the Chinese route, which I think is pretty close to the standard route, and figure out where 8,200 meters is. And I think what you'll see is it's terrain that has been crossed over every which way by a lot of people. You know, climbers, but also people who have been searching, and, you know, Jake Norton and all of his various expeditions, and Adrian Ballinger, you know, yourself, and, you know, Tom Pollitz, and
Andy, Andy, and Pollitz, right.
And the various, like Sherpa expeditions that have done, you know, their own searches. So I think we all agree. I know Jake sees it this way, that there's nowhere else to look. And we're sort of at this point where if the body was there, somebody would have found it. And so I think at some point the body was removed. And what I think that would look like is basically just kind of tumbling it down the mountain into the abyss. I feel like that's kind of what the Chinese would do. Not that they would do it in a disrespectful way, but that they're, you know, there's an effort underway, as you well know, to clean the mountain up and to not have so many dead bodies laying all over the place. It's unseemly and it's not really what anyone wants to see. And so both sides of the mountain, there's efforts that are being made to clean it up in that respect. And it's pretty much impossible to bring bodies down from up there. It's just not, it's not safe. It's not possible. So
it's a lot.
I don't think the body's there. I think they found the body in 1975. I think they found the camera. I think they brought the camera home. I think they tried to develop the film and it didn't turn out. And then for whatever reason, and then for a while there, it was just kind of a thing. It wasn't being talked about, but it was talked about that body was up there by numerous members of the 1960 and the 1975 expedition. And there's no reason why they would just make that up.
No.
So that's in my book, a real thing. And at some point the body was either flushed off the mountain naturally by an avalanche or pushed out of the way or moved and maybe moved. But then once it wasn't, you know, kind of frozen in, it was washed away by an avalanche or the wind. And so I think the body's gone, you know, the body without the camera, which potentially would have this evidence that could change history. Like, it should be left alone at this point. I mean, if we can say that the camera's not there, then there's no reason anymore to look for it. And so I think that deal is done.
That's pretty cool. That's decisive. And so a lot of elements of the mystery will keep people looking, and there's the seeds, the kernels of pop opportunity for another sleuth who's out there interested in finding, getting to the bottom of it. Yeah, because if that film is destroyed, obviously, it'd be cool to see, to have that camera and return it to the Somerville family, right? Because ostensibly it was Howard Somerville's camera. That would be pretty cool. So, and you don't even have to climb for that. You just have to get to China and go into that some dusty old back room and have them pull out all the, amidst all their other artifacts and things.
I hope I'll be that guy.
Cool.
And you know, one thing that's working in my favor, apart the fact that I sort of pulled the lid back on a fair bit of stuff, but the third poll is being translated into Chinese. And so it will be read over there, and I feel like in some way, shape, or form that has to be, you know, giving the whole story a stamp of approval.
Yeah.
China opens up, I will endeavor to go and to see if the camera might actually be there. And that would be a cool, and maybe I don't know, is there such a thing as like a postscript to a postscript?
Yeah, PPS, right? That at the end of a letter or an email.
There you go.
If you'd like to learn more about Mark Sinnott or purchase the hardcover or paperback copy of The Third Poll, Mark's website is at marksinnott.com. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe to this podcast, or if you're watching us on YouTube, do the same. If you share it, comment, and like it, that will help us immensely. Join my mailing list, tom.dharma.pollard@gmail.com. This is The Happiness Quotient. Thank you for visiting. I will see you all real soon.